Salofa Lava, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susana Suisuki. Coming up,
the numbers have increased consistently for 3 weeks now.
Samoa declares an outbreak of dengue fever. Also, PNG takes inspiration from other countries who have curbed gun violence, and
we want accountability. It needs to be investigated by a third party that is not associated with the government.
A new report reveals the devastating impacts of the Lahaina wildfires. A dengue fever outbreak has been declared on Friday afternoon in Samoa. There have been more than 250 cases in total, with majority of cases on the mainland, northwest of Upolu, where most of the population lives. The World Health Organization describes dengue fever as a viral infection that spreads from mosquitoes to people. Alicia Foon spoke with Samoa's Director General of Health, Ayuno Dr. Alek Ikaroma, about the evolving situation.
Cabinet has approved the request from the Ministry of Health and doing a national campaign for cleanups to make sure that all breeding sites for mosquitoes are destroyed, and also will be doing fumigation to destroy mosquitoes in targeted areas where there's a high incidence of dengue fever, and also to declare the outbreak of dengue fever.
How concerning is this? How rapidly are you seeing these numbers of cases rise? I understand that there's been 80 cases in April so far.
Yes, well, I was hoping really that the trend would reverse, and because we have been raising awareness about dengue fever, the presence of dengue fever for nearly 2 months now. And when, as you know, we've had so much rain in the past 3 months. And so therefore, number of mosquitoes have increased in the country. And we have been raising awareness for 2 months and hoping really that the incidence will decrease. But in fact, it has increased. So therefore, we have referred to the WHO guidelines and the definition of an outbreak of dengue fever, and it has met that. So in fact, the numbers have increased consistently for 2 weeks now, 3 weeks now. So now we have more than 250 cases in total.
And where are the hotspots in Samoa?
The hotspots in Samoa are in northwest of Upolu, where most of the population live. And there are some cases in Savai'i, but most of the cases are on this main island.
And how are you preparing for this? What can you expect in the weeks and months to come? Will this be anything like the 2017 outbreak?
Well, we haven't had any deaths yet compared to the previous outbreaks, and we're wanting to avoid that by acting now. And as you know, it will be a multi-sector approach to this. So hence the reason once we call the outbreak, and we have a vector control strategy that is going to kick in. Stakeholders across other ministries and also going right down to the village level will be engaged. So community awareness and community engagement is very much part of our work, together with the Ministry of Women and also with the committees and the villages. So again, it's to destroy breeding sites from mosquitoes and clean up, a general clean up, because tall grass will probably hide small containers like empty coconut shells, which will breed mosquitoes.
And for people in Samoa in this area who are concerned they have dengue fever, what is your advice to them?
The advice to them, of course, is to do a major cleanup to reduce breeding sites for mosquitoes. And we're doing fumigation of schools and areas, hospitals, to reduce the number of mosquitoes. We're asking really to the use of mosquito nets and repellents to reduce the incidence of mosquito bites. So those are all the areas really. And I'm hoping really that we're going to continue this campaign right throughout until we've seen the numbers turn south. And once the numbers go down, then we can kind of relax our campaign. But the campaign is going to kick in a major way, I feel, starting this weekend.
And what number would you be comfortable with?
Again, we'll be looking at definitions of WHO, and single digits would be good. Less than 10 would be good. Anything in the double digits, I feel that we still need to continue.
And what does this mean for overseas travellers and tourists coming in and out of Samoa?
Well, that's a good question. So that will scare away some of the tourists. I hope not, because it's not infectious spread from person to person. It's a spread from mosquitoes to people. So I hope the tourists will still come, but making sure that they use repellents so that they avoid mosquito bites.
Papua New Guinea is being called on to look to how African nations curbed gun violence. PNG has been racked with violent gun crime for many years, with signs at recent times that it's worsening. A conference this week involving the United Nations, the European Union, and PNG police and military in Port Moresby discussed ways to overcome the problem. Our PNG correspondent Scott Wiley told Don Wiseman what has come from the conference.
They've decided on setting up something of a council that will be the overarching body looking at gun violence, gun control, and drawing from best practices all over the world. So best practices out of Africa, where they've got similar issues like Papua New Guinea, where with the use of small arms and light weapons. That is just in draft form yet. It hasn't evolved to a document yet, and that'll be taken to NEC for approval. There's a six-month deadline that they've put to create a working document or some sort of a document that can be viewed by NEC. So that's basically where it's at right now after 3 days of that workshop.
When we talk about best practice, what is best practice? You know, we had weapons disposal bins placed around Bougainville, and there's a big question mark over whether or not that worked. So what do we mean by best practice?
Yeah, so it's a council that looks specifically at guns violence, the importation of guns. The other important thing that has come about from this one is the removal of the role of firearms register from the commissioner and put under this committee, if it comes to that. So it's still in its infancy, it hasn't, but that's one of the suggestions. Now, that suggestion has been drawn from the guns control report, the Singerok report that was written in 2005, 19 years ago, which hasn't really been acted upon. So Major General Singerok, who was there also contributing at the workshop, stated that all of his suggestions have to be reviewed also. And the workshop agreed with that review of the gun control report and to incorporate it in some way or form in another document that will be taken to NEC.
For something like this to work, it's going to need some significant teeth, isn't it? At some point, authorities are going to have to approach people with guns and say, hand them over, aren't they?
Yes. There was a lot of criticism about political will. Now, if you look at the political will over the last 19 years since the gun control report, it hasn't really been there. I mean, there was an initial fire at the beginning with Sir Michael Somare under his government and Birakimi Sopa as police minister asking for this report to be produced. Now, that report was produced. It hasn't been acted upon. And successive governments haven't done anything about it. Now, this particular government, the Marape Rosso government, has initiated several things. Now, one of those things is about changes in legislation and specifying the harshest penalties for illegal weapons, possession of illegal weapons, and that's life imprisonment for anyone found in possession of illegal weapons. But the problem is the enforcement. So the Deputy Prime Minister was also at the closing, and he's stated to the workshop, and senior commanders of the RPNGC and the Defence Force were there as well. So he said, while the government has acted on all of this and changed laws as legislators are supposed to do, the enforcement is still weak. And there has to be this willingness to go out and actually arrest people who are in possession of weapons. Now, it's not difficult to identify them. It's all over social media. It's just there's been no will to go out and arrest them. There's also, I did a separate interview with the Deputy Prime Minister. He talked about the PNG's intelligence capacity that was neglected over some 20 years. So government's putting money into the intelligence sector, and the Deputy Prime Minister has been meeting with the Police Minister, and the Defence Minister has been meeting with Defence Police and the National Intelligence Organisation to improve their capacities so that they're able to better identify and pass on that information to people who can actually go out and arrest them.
North Pacific countries continue to face extreme weather conditions. Marshall Islands, Guam, Palau, Mariana Islands and the Federated States of Micronesia have been experiencing extreme droughts, with rainfall now expected as late as June. The Micronesian region has received below normal rainfall since last month, with temperatures soaring to 30 degrees. Last month, the driest of the year saw crop failures, water rationing and an increased risk of wildfires in the outer islands. Rachel Nath spoke with our Guam correspondent, Naina Rao.
Thank you for joining us, Naina. What latest information do you have from the Guam Weather Office?
Yeah, so the drought is spreading and worsening in some areas of Micronesia. Drought intensity has been upgraded from extreme to exceptional for Yap proper in Yap State in the Federated States of Micronesia, or FSM, and the atoll of Wotje and nearby islands in the northern Marshall Islands. This means that those places are experiencing exceptional to widespread crop and pasture losses, exceptional fire risk with shortages of water and reservoir streams and wells are likely or causing water emergencies. The Weather Service has predicted that in the long term, below the normal rainfall is expected for at least the next few weeks in the greater Micronesia region, but it'll likely be a couple of more months across parts of Yap State and the northern Marshall Islands.
And so what impacts has the drought had on the environment and these communities?
Yeah, I mean, the longer the rainfall persists, it's going to affect the agricultural crops and other vegetation on the islands. It's going to take a huge hit in agricultural losses because of the drought in these locations. And this is important to note because for some of these communities and these islands, the agriculture crops is their source of sustenance and livelihood. So we are seeing, you know, coconuts drying out, taro patches drying out, a lot of crops just drying because this drought is persisting.
And so what are you hearing from the ground? Has anyone spoken to you about the experience?
I have spoken to a Guam resident who is from Yap and has family in Yap, and communication is quite sparse. One of my sources from the island of Lamatrek in Yap said the last correspondence he had was that water is being delivered to these islands, and that's there's that effort going on, but that's the last communication since internet service only happens there when there's a ship. The ship delivers these drought relief supplies, and there's Starlink attached to it, which is an internet service provider. So it's intermittent. Communication is intermittent, but it happens when these ships are coming in to bring in these drought relief supplies for the islands.
The dire situation. Now, could you tell us what the response has been like from the government or the emergency services so far? Could we see the U.S. providing some assistance?
Yes. So at the request of the U.S. Embassy and the FSM, the U.S. Coast Guard actually delivered drought relief supplies last week. They included, obviously, water, food, and reverse osmosis units to four outer island communities in Yap. This was in partnership with USAID and the International Organization for Migration, and humanitarian aid and assistance is ongoing. It's just that the thing that's causing most concern are how agricultural and crop losses are going to take a hit. But water is being delivered to these islands, and there is aid and assistance that's being delivered to manage the drought for residents and people living there.
And what could you tell us a little more about what people have had to sort of give up in this time?
Yeah, I mean, again, one of my sources, who has family in Yap said, residents are just limiting and rationing the water they use as best as they can, as best as they can. They're using water only when necessary. Some people are bathing in the lagoon and the ocean just to avoid having to use fresh water. So people are preserving water a lot. And they're preserving water more than they normally do. But there's this emphasis that because drought is kind of like the way of life in the Micronesian region, and people have been through several droughts growing up in the region, the reliance on community and having a community first thinking has helped with resiliency during tough times like these.
So I guess the big question now then is, when could we see the end to this drought?
Yeah, it's tough because in the long term, below the normal rainfall is expected for the next few weeks in the greater Micronesia region. But it'll probably be a couple of more months across parts of Yap State and the Northern Marshall Islands. The Mariana Islands will also see worsening drought due to ongoing drought condition, sorry, due to ongoing dry conditions in the next week or so. But some showers in the next week will bring relief to Palau and parts of Yap State. And that was the one thing that the National Weather Service pointed out was the surprise from this ongoing drought was the abundance of rainfall occurring in Palau, some parts of Yap State, and Chuuk and Pohnpei State as well in the Federated States of Micronesia. So it's very, it's the forecast is fluid, but definitely a couple more months for some parts of Yap and the Northern Marshall Islands.
RNZ correspondent Naina Rao in Guam. Thank you.
The first of three reports investigating how wildfires caused the deaths of 101 people in Lahaina has been released by Hawaii's Attorney General's office. It comes almost 9 months since the disaster occurred. Whenua Whanua has more.
We want accountability. It needs to be investigated by a third party that is not associated with the government. And I question, there's so many things that are questionable that has happened here.
That was a resident of Lahaina speaking to the Maui County Council just weeks after wildfires ripped through his town, leaving his family homeless. Amidst calls for answers into why so many people died in the disaster, an independent investigation was launched by the Fire Safety Research Institute. Hawaii Attorney General Ann Lopez announced the first findings of the report this week. She told the media the overall investigation seeks to find out why there were so many deaths, how the fires unfolded, and what happened in the aftermath.
What policies and procedures were in place that worked, which were in place that didn't work, and then determining why. And then finally, being able to understand the facts and the whys so that we can obtain recommendations about best practices for policies and procedures so that this absolutely never happens again.
It's the first of three reports planned to be released. This one provides a time frame of the fires. Lead investigator Derek Alconis says the next two reports are expected to give potentially incriminating evidence through a forensic study.
We also were on site with our team walking the streets of Lahaina, documenting in detail the loss that was suffered, the structural damage, and identify where, answer the question of why some structures survived and some did not. We wanted to understand the areas where lives were lost, understand the fire's progression through those areas.
The homes of over 6,000 people were destroyed by the Lahaina wildfires.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple, and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, Tofa Suifua.